नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो विष्णुवे कृष्णवस्ताय भूतले श्रीमाते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी नामने नमस्ते सारस्वत देव गौरवाणी प्रचारणे नरविशेष शनिवारी पाश्चात्य देश चारणे श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव श्री गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे रीड श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 2 चैप्टर 7 वर्स 51 इदं भागवतम नाम यन्मे भागवतोदितम् संग्रहोऽयं विभूतीनां त्वं एतद् विपुलीकुरु इदं भागवतं न इदं दिस् भागवतं साइन्स् आफ् गाड् हेड् नाम आफ् द नेम् यत् दट् विच् मे unto me, Bhagavata, by the personality of Godhead, Uditam, enlightened. Sangraha is the accumulation of I am, his, Vibhutinam, of the diverse potencies. Tvam, your good self, Etat, the science of Godhead. Vipuli, expand. Kulu, do it. Translation, O Narada, the science of God, Srimad Bhagavatam, was spoken to me in summary by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it was spoken as the accumulation of his diverse potencies. Please expand the science yourself. Purport. The Bhagavatam in a nutshell, spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is about half a dozen verses which will appear ahead in the is the science of God, and it is the potent representation of the personality of Godhead. He, being absolute, is none different from the science of God, Srimad Bhagavatam. Brahmaji received this science of Godhead from the Lord directly, and he handed over the same to Narada, who in his turn ordered Srila Vyasadeva to expand it. So the transcendental knowledge of the Supreme Lord is not mental speculation by the mundane wranglers, but is uncontaminated, eternal, perfect knowledge beyond the jurisdiction of material modes. The Bhagavata Purana is therefore the direct incarnation of the Lord in the form of transcendental sound. And once you receive this transcendental knowledge from the bona fide representative of the Lord in the chain of the disciplic succession, from the Lord to Brahmaji, from Brahmaji to Narada, from Narada to Vyasa, and Vyasa to Sukadeva Goswami, from Sukadeva Goswami to Sutta Goswami, the ripened fruit of the Vedic tree drops from one hand to another without being broken by falling suddenly from a high branch down to the earth. Therefore, unless one hears the science of Godhead from the bona fide representative of the disciplic succession, as above mentioned, for one to understand the theme of the science of God, it will be a difficult job. It should never be heard from the professional Bhagavatam reciters who earn their livelihood by gratifying the senses of the audience. Translation, O Narada, the science of God, Srimad Bhagavatam, was spoken to me in summary by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it was spoken as the accumulation of his divine potencies. Please expand this science yourself. So, this is simply a request to explain all about Bhagavan. So, Bhagavata means the scripture concerning Bhagavan. But it is also very special because we know that Vishnu Purana is also about Bhagavatam, and other Puranas are also about Bhagavatam, the Sattvic Puranas, like the Padma Purana, six Puranas, which are classed as Sattvic Puranas. They're all about Supreme Lord Vishnu or Krishna. So they're all about Bhagavan. So when we talk about Bhagavatam, we're actually talking about Swayam Bhagavan. This is the distinction of Bhagavatam from other scriptures. In the last part of the first canto, the story was told how Narada Muni spoke to Vedavyas after he had written the Brahma Sutras, compiled the Vedas, gave them to his disciples, wrote the Mahabharata with the Bhagavad Gita, wrote 18 Puranas, and still he was dissatisfied, something was missing. So then Narada came and told him, yeah, all of this is not applicable for the people of Kali Yuga. People couldn't understand Brahma Sutras. Everyone writes a different commentary and everyone gets confused. And the Puranas were written for, some were written for Tamasic people, so they praise Lord Shiva as Bhagavan. Others are written for people in Rajagun, and they praise Brahma as Bhagavan. And then we have some for people in Sattvagun, and their Vishnu is called Bhagavan. So people simply get confused and say, well, everybody's Bhagavan. So this is not going to work in Kali Yuga. People are so unintelligent, they won't understand your purpose in trying to raise people from lower gunas to higher gunas. So you simply state the fact that everybody in Kali Yuga should worship Krishna. And based on that instruction, Vedavyas rewrote, actually, because the 18 Puranas were already there, so he rewrote one of them, and that becomes the Bhagavatam as we know it. So the outstanding feature is to point out that we concentrate on only one form of Bhagavan, and that is Krishna. And therefore, in the first canto, after listing all the different avatars, Krishna is pointed out as Swayam Bhagavan. He is in a special category. And that is the topic of the Bhagavatam. And of course, that is the Asraya, or the 10th topic of the Bhagavatam as well. So Srimad Bhagavatam is about Bhagavan, but it actually is about Krishna. Krishna is the ultimate form who can give the ultimate bliss to the jivas. So it is a special mercy at this particular time that Bhagavatam appears and glorifies Krishna. It is through this work that the people of Kali Yuga can realize Krishna. So, at the very beginning of Bhagavatam, as Prabhupada mentions here, it is called the highest fruit on the tree of the Vedas, which are, the Veda tree is called a Kalpataru, which is a desire tree. So on that tree we have various scriptures which give various fruits. So we have all the Vedas there, and the Puranas, and the Smriti scriptures like Mano Smriti, and Pancharatrik scriptures, and the Vedic Angas, six Angas of the Vedas, etc. With all sorts of scriptures. And they all give their particular fruits or results. So if we take the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, we get Svargaloka or Brahmaloka or whatever. And we take the Gyan portion of the Vedas and then we get Mukti. That is the little fruit that you get. And you can even get, if you go to the Sattvic Puranas, then you can get Bhakti and you can get Prema for Vishnu. Or if you take Ramayana, then you can get Prema for Ramchandra. All the different fruits all over the tree you can get. And the jiva can take the fruits and enjoy them. So you can enjoy the bliss of liberation, the bliss of Svargaloka or Brahmaloka, or the bliss of Vaikuntha, or the bliss of Ayodhya. But the tree, of course, is there. And then on the very top of the tree, we have the Bhagavatam. So Of course, the top represents the final fruit or the highest fruit. So it's the highest fruit. It's also the most difficult to get to because you have to climb the most to get up there to get the fruit. So it's the highest and most inaccessible fruit as well. So why is it the most, why is it the highest fruit compared to going to Ayodhya or going to Vaikuntha? Because it's all Bhagavan anyway. And it because it's realization of Krishna, who is Swayam Bhagavan. That is why. See, a realization of the highest form of God gives the highest bliss. So therefore, this fruit is the highest fruit, and it's also the sweetest fruit. Because you get intense rasa that the other realizations do not give. That is the special nature of Krishna. In the Nectar Devotion, there is a verse by Rupa Goswami in the first part. And it says, yes, according to Siddhanta, or philosophy, Vishnu and Krishna are non-different, abheda. Because they're all one. This is one Supreme Lord, not many lords. We only have one object of worship, whether it's Vishnu or Krishna. This is one person, actually. Just as we have in the material world so many expansions of Paramatma, in each jiva there's a Paramatma. It's not a different person. It's all one. It's all Vishnu. And that Kshiradaksha Vishnu is an expansion of Garbhadaksha Vishnu, is an expansion of Mahavishnu. They're all one. And that Mahavishnu is also an expansion of Vishnu in the spiritual world. So they're all this one person, actually. It's just Vishnu operating in different modes, that's all. It's one person. And it's simply, the same way we have Vishnu is like an expansion of Krishna. So they're all one. All the avatars are one as well. So, Supreme Lord is actually one person. But when he manifests all of his wonderful qualities, intimate, sweet qualities, that is Krishna. And if we can realize that, then we get special bliss, highest bliss. So that is why the Bhagavatam is considered to be the highest fruit on the tree of the Vedas. It is authorized because it's Vedic, it's scriptural, but it's also the supreme scripture because it reveals Krishna, who's the highest form, and then we can get the highest experience of bliss. So, ultimately, that means not just worship of Krishna and recognition of Krishna, because if we go to, we can go to Dwarka, that form is called Purna. And it is higher than Srimadeva or Ramchandra. If we go to Mathura, the form of Krishna is there. It's called Purnatara, which means more perfect. If we go to Vrindavan, then we have the same Krishna there. He's called Purnatama. It's most perfect. So still, even in Krishna, there is variations in how much qualities he manifests. So in Dwarka, he manifests a slightly less intensity of his sweetness because it is mixed with realization that he is God. So the Aishvarya mixes with the Madhurya and dilutes the Madhurya to some degree. Madhurya decreases because of the Aishvarya aspect. For instance, in Vasudeva and Devaki, they also have Vatsalya Rasa for Krishna. So it's sweet, it's Madhurya in one sense. But they also know Krishna's Supreme Lord. And Krishna is the king of Dwarka. So their Vatsalya, their affection is restricted by that fact. When all of the inhabitants of Dwarka, not all of them, but at least the queen, all the queens came, and Vasudeva and Devaki came to Kurukshetra for the eclipse, Nanda and Yasoda and the Brajavasis also came there. And then Krishna and Balaram met Nanda and Yasoda privately in a tent, and Rohini and Devaki were there, and they were looking. And then when Mother Yasoda embraced Krishna and Balaram, the milk began to flow from her breast, and she went into a trance, just hugging them. And Devaki was looking at that and said, oh, how can she do that? Because I'm the mother. But her affection is greater than mine. How is that possible? So in other words, Ananda and Yasoda, their love is more intense than Vasudeva and Devaki's love. Yeah. So that's why Dwarka love is considered just Purna. But yet, that even that is superior to anything in Vaikuntha. But still, it is less. Mathura is a little in between. Mathura is like Dwarka because the people are the Rishnis there, and they recognize Krishna as Supreme Lord. They are his servants, and they all understood that Krishna had come out of the womb of Devaki, and he had his forearms there, and he looked like Vishnu. He's also Vishnu. We know that. So their love is a little bit restricted, even though they have closeness with him. But it is not as grand and majestic as that in Dwarka, where Krishna, after the Gurukul, then they move, and he goes to the Gurukul and everything, and he goes to Dwarka and he assumes the role of their leader. So in Mathura, he's not quite at the being the leader there. He's still acting as a little boy a little bit. So there's a little bit of relaxation there. Less Aishwarya aspect is manifested. So it's kind of intermediary. It's called Purnatara, a little more relaxed than Dwarka. But if we come to Vrindavan, then the inhabitants of Vrindavan do not see Krishna at all as Supreme Lord, and they refuse to accept that. And even if Krishna says, I'm Supreme Lord, look, I'm the universal form, I can put all the universe inside my belly, and Mother Yasoda sees it, she will never believe it. And even if he kills demons, they don't believe. Oh no, it wasn't Krishna actually. It's actually Vishnu. Vishnu has come and done all this for him. He's disguised himself as empowered. He's working through Krishna, so it's not actually Krishna doing anything. Or maybe Balaram doing it, but not Krishna. Because he's our son. He can't do anything. So they never see him as Supreme Lord in Vrindavan. The Aishwarya that he displays is hidden from the people of Vrindavan. They will never believe it. Yeah? So when the cowherd boys come back and say, oh, Krishna killed the demons, and the mother thought, okay, yeah. They don't really believe it. Kids are exaggerating. I'll say. Or if he lifts Govardhan Hill. And everybody saw it, and they saw it for 7 days that he was lifting up Govardhan Hill with his one hand, the little finger, his left hand, for 7 days. Then, yes, it was grandeur and power manifested, but somehow when the whole thing was happening, they were so attracted to Krishna's wonderful form, they forgot that he was doing this. And then they thought, well, maybe, yeah, he may be getting tired, so they also started trying to hold up the mountain for him and everything like this. They have sticks and are trying to hold up the mountain for Krishna. And then finally, Mother Yasoda realizes, oh, yeah, it wasn't actually Krishna. He can't do that, actually, because he's his little boy. So he could only do it because he got the help of Nanda Maharaj and Balaram and others. They helped him do it, so therefore he could do something like this. But actually, he's not very powerful. So somehow they have some excuse to hide Krishna's powers. Even he displays his powers in Vrindavan. And the reason is, why it's not that they're fools, it's because their affection is so intense that any display of Krishna's powers cannot obstruct their affection. So their affection blinds them to all of his powers, and they won't recognize them. So, therefore, because of the intensity of that love that's never interrupted, then the people of Vrindavan are considered to be the highest devotees, and Krishna in that form, and Vrindavan is considered to be the highest form because it's unimpeded. So the combination of the Brajabasis and Krishna gives rise to the highest realization. So Krishna in Vrindavan is considered the form of Bhagavan, Swayam Bhagavan. Even though Krishna in all these places is Swayam Bhagavan, still in Vrindavan is highest. But even in Vrindavan, there's gradations. We have Shantarasa, and we have Dasya Rasa, and Sakya Rasa, and Vatsalya Rasa, and Madhurya Rasa. And they're all wonderful, but there's also a little bit of difference. So they're compared to like juices. And if we take all the juices, we have like sugarcane juice and orange juice and grape juice, whatever, sugarcane juice and all these things, juices are sweet. Then we have mango juice. So Madhurya Rasa is like the mango juice. It's got some special sweetness and special nourishment in it, some special attraction in it, which is very special. So even though everything in Vrindavan is very, very sweet, it is that Madhurya Rasa which is the sweetest of all. So therefore, ultimately, the sweetness of Bhagavatam is the Madhurya Rasa that is presented, the love of Radha and Krishna ultimately, because in Madhurya Rasa we have all sorts of gopis, and then the highest gopis of all are Radha and her group, yeah, and they come up to the level of Mahabhava, whereas the others don't. Yeah? So that's the highest experience of all. And of all the gopis, Radha is the highest. So therefore, the Bhagavatam is considered the highest fruit, the sweetest fruit, because it actually presents that Madhurya Rasa and the love of Radha and Krishna. It is because of that, actually, we find that Vishnu Chakravarti takes the first verse of Bhagavatam and he analyzes it. And he says the first verse should represent the whole book. Because generally an author in the introductory verses will describe the book and its glories and the subject matter, etc. And therefore Bhagavatam is no exception. So we'll find on the first verse there's elaborate 40, 50 page commentary. So our Acharya's Vishwanath has a huge commentary. And even Vallabhacharya has a huge commentary. All of the different commentators have huge commentary in the first verse of Bhagavatam. Because it's the essential verse that summarizes and includes everything. If we look at the verse, however, it looks a little bit abstract. It doesn't even mention Krishna's name there. It says, Satyam Param Dhimahiya, meditate on this highest truth, which is like abstract, a little bit abstract, etc. You know? And then it mentions Brahma Sutras in the beginning, Abhigyasvarada, etc. So Vishwan Chakravarti says, that may be so, but Bhagavatam is such a work that the first verse, because it should represent everything, therefore it also explains everything completely. So he says that yes, it does have a general description of supreme truth, absolute truth. Then that's there in the superficial meaning, first meaning. Yes, supreme Lord is all powerful. But it has another meaning also. That is particularly representing Krishna. So he goes through each word of the first verse and he gives another meaning to represent Krishna and how he was born in Mathura and came over to Vrindavan, etc. And then he says, well, of course, that's Krishna, but then it also has another meaning. And what's that meaning? It also represents Radha and Krishna, because that should be the highest goal. So then he takes the verse again and goes over the meaning of each word, and each word is representing Radha Krishna. And he has another meaning that should represent the highest rasa. So therefore, he goes with the Bhagavad, the first verse again, and the words represent Madhurya Rasa. And so, in this way, he's given, I think, six meanings of the verse, of the first verse, to represent higher and higher realizations in the Bhagavad until we get love of Radha Krishna, Madhurya Rasa. Just from the first verse. So in other words, Bhagavatam is special because it finally presents the that fruit, which is love of Radha and Krishna. That's a special nature, very, very special nature. It does other things as well. It does present the general idea of God. So in so many verses and all the different cantos, we got, for instance, this here. We got the description of the avatars and description of the Purusha avatars and how they create the material world. So that is the general representation of the Supreme Lord, how he creates the material world, how he destroys it. So we get the topics above, and like Sarga, Visarga, Nirodha, destruction, presented very nicely. Then we get a little more details about God in his pastimes. So we get the different avatars, like Varaha, or Matsya, or Kurma, etc. These are presented throughout the different cantos of the Bhagavatam. So we get a little more detailed knowledge of the Supreme Lord as well. And then, of course, we get the Krishna himself in the 10th canto. And then finally in the 10th canto, we also get Madhurya Rasa in the chapters on the Rasa-lila. So therefore, the Bhagavatam is considered to be the highest fruit, but it also presents other things for different types of people. And it also hides some things. So it's the highest fruit in the tree. And because it's the highest fruit, it takes some effort to get up, climb up to the top and get the fruit. But you can't just throw the fruit down on the ground. You have to pass it down because it's the sweetest fruit. It's also not only the sweetest fruit, it's also the softest fruit, the ripest fruit. So therefore it says, Pibata Bhagavatam. You drink it. You don't chew it. It's very, very soft. So that fruit is all liquidy. And there's no seed, and there's no skin, and there's no fibers in it. It is pure rasa. So in that sense, it's also a little bit difficult to take that fruit from the top of the tree and get it onto the ground so you can enjoy it. So the Prabhupada explains here how it has to come down in the disciplic succession. So Brahma received it in four verses, and then he passed it on to Narada, Narada to Vyasa, Vyasa to Supa, etc. So, you know, param param, that fruit has to be passed down from one person to another down the tree and gradually gets on the ground, and then the devotee's there, he can take the fruit in his hand and he can drink it. Otherwise, if it falls on the ground, then it's you can't drink it. So it has to come through the disciplic succession or the param param. So Bhagavatam is the sweetest fruit, but it also has to have proper delivery. Very important. So we can't just take the Bhagavatam as such. We have to get it delivered through parampara, through a proper speaker. So the Padma Purana says that if the Harikatha comes from the mouth of an Avaishnava, one who has no belief in the supremacy of Supreme, you know, Krishna, then, even though it is amrita, the word of Shastra is absolute and is sweet and wonderful, spiritual, if it comes out of the mouth of an Avaishnava, then it becomes poison. In one sense. In other words, it's milk, but the serpent has touched it. So if you drink that milk, you get poisoned. You don't get a very good effect. If you take milk, yes, you get nourished. It is sweet to taste. You enjoy it. You get nourished. If you take milk with poison in it, then you may die. So you don't get any spiritual advantage out of that. So if we hear from a non-Vaishnava, the Bhagavatam, we get the wrong effect. No nourishment, no spiritual nourishment at all. The opposite effect. Hear from a Vaishnava, good effect. So though scripture is perfect, we also have to get the proper source of it. Otherwise, it will have the wrong effect. And Prabhupada mentions here about the professional reciters doing it, no value at all, because they're doing it as for money. And they usually don't have a parampara. They are not, and we don't know what they are. They look like they're devotees because they're praising Krishna and the Bhagavatam, but we do know not what they believe in. So there are some, or most we can say, ultimately are impersonalists. In Kerala, for instance, all Bhagavatam reciters are impersonalists. They don't know about Vaishnavas at all. They're all impersonalists. And so the final conclusion is merged in Brahman. Even though they'll recite very nicely, they'll know the whole Bhagavatam inside out, and they recite all the slokas, and they'll praise Krishna, and they'll go through all the pastimes of the avatars in Krishna, and everything, get people very excited. Ultimately, they don't believe in Krishna at all. Not only in South India, North India as well. We have so many professional reciters, but what's their line of authority? They just decided, oh, I'm going to be a Bhagavat reciter because I like telling stories, and they go and pay some money to a guy. He teaches them all the stories, a two-year course, a three-year course, gets his degree. Then he goes out and becomes a reciter. And if he's very good at talking, then he becomes famous, and people invite him, and he makes his living that way. So he's not really interested in spiritual life. He's just interested in exciting people so he can make some money. So useless. It's all useless. So it depends on the conviction of the speaker. In other words, the speaker has devotion. Where's the devotion? The devotion is in the Atma. We have Shraddha in the Atma, and then that develops into bhakti. And if we have bhakti, and then we speak about Krishna, then it has potency. We convey the bhakti through the katha, or through the holy name. You chant the holy name, and you're impersonalist, it's useless. If it's a devotee, the name has power.
So the name is a name in any sense. Even Ajamil chanted the name and he got effect even though he didn't have a pure devotee. But it really gets its power from the devotees. And of course it comes from aparadi, then it is negative effect. So luckily Ajamil didn't have any negative effects on it. He was neutral, just nothing. He didn't know anything. He just chanted the name of the Lord and he got effect. But if we have one who thinks that the Lord is illusory, the Lord is maya, ultimately it's all part of the material world and only truth is Brahman, then definitely this aparad. And the effect on us will be negative, not positive. So this is a type of sangha, type of association by hearing, a very important type of association. And it affects us. So if we hear from the people that have no faith in the Lord, even though externally it looks very nice, then we get affected. A sangha is very powerful. And so, if you eat the food of someone who's a materialist, it goes in your body, and then you get affected that way. If it goes in your ear, you get affected that way. Rupa Goswami gives the example of the crystal, the spatika. You know, we have a little stone quartz crystal. It is clear. We put it into the red flower, it looks red. Put it into the yellow flower, it looks yellow. Put it into the orange flower, it looks orange. So that's people. You go near the red person, you get red. You go near the yellow person, you get yellow. You go near the orange person, you get orange, so to speak. In other words, you go to the Maya body, then you become a Maya body. You go near the devotee, then you become devotional. Very easily, people get influenced somehow or other. So especially when we start hearing and absorbing with interest, then we get affected. Or you eat the prasad, eat their food, then you get influenced that way. There are many ways in which we can get influenced through sangha. So therefore, we're advised not to hear from these persons. And on the contrary, better that we hear. Very beneficial if we hear from someone who has devotion. Then we get very good effects. Because the devotion of that particular person permeates the sound that we hear. And that sound goes in your ear, then that devotion goes into your atma, and you get stimulus for your growth of bhakti. But if, on the other hand, if it's not there, you get aparad, etc., then nothing happens. So we have to hear from a line of authority. We have to hear the scriptures from someone who had heard from someone who had heard from someone. So therefore we get a parampara of learning. This, of course, is not a diksha line. This is a shiksha line. Sukadeva hears from, Vyasa, who hears from Narada. It's not a diksha line, it's a shiksha line. So this is very, very important that we hear from the proper sources. And that is why everybody traces out parampara system, because we do need that line. So in this way, the Bhagavatam comes down intact because of the parampara system. In itself, yes, it is very good because it appears, but then we also need the other factor, the proper delivery system. So both things are necessary for the getting the actual spiritual value, the spiritual taste out of the Bhagavatam. In the last part of the Bhagavatam, there's the prayers to the personified Vedas, a very, very complex chapter in which all different philosophies are explained and refuted. And the whole question arises, the question comes up, how is it possible that this supreme entity beyond material conceptions and beyond material worlds can be described at all? How can you write the Bhagavatam? Because the supreme is indescribable, beyond words and beyond conceptions. So how can we put it in words and then think about it? So that's the source of all these verses in the prayers of the personified Veda. So then the story is told that that answer was given when they began praying to wake up the Supreme Lord who was sleeping on the milk ocean. In those prayers, they say many things. And it may be difficult to say, what is the answer actually to this question? Because you can't figure out what the answer is. But the actual answer is that it is possible that words can describe the Supreme Lord. And of course, the Upanishads say no. The Brahman is beyond words and conception. But particularly Brahman, the impersonal aspect is definitely. But then we have the Lord with his spiritual qualities and spiritual forms, spiritual activities. So at least somehow there should be some description. But then again, how can material words describe the form and qualities of Bhagavan? It's not possible at all for Brahman because there's no form and qualities to describe. So words are not possible at all. Even if he had spiritual words, he couldn't use them because he has no form and no qualities. So you have to be silent in terms of Brahman. If we have Bhagavan, then yeah, spiritual words, spiritual could express it, but then we have words here, and we're hearing words with our ears, which look like material words. So how is it possible that scriptures can be made or manifested which can describe the form and qualities and activities of Bhagavan? And the answer is, Bhagavan has spiritual shaktis, which make that possible. So therefore, when we hear the words are no longer material words because they're permeated with the shakti of the Lord. They have spiritual effect, not material effect. They may look like material words or material sounds, but they're not spiritual. So, for two reasons. One is, of course, the Supreme Lord himself spoke to Brahma and Brahma spoke, so we got a transmission of spiritual sound that way, directly from the Lord. And secondly, because the speaker himself has some bhakti. So he has the shakti of the Lord also. Bhakti is the shakti of the Lord. And when he speaks, then that shakti is presented in the words also. So therefore, we have scripture, and then we have to speak it through the devotee of the Lord. Then it is actual scripture. And if we don't do that, it's not. So, therefore, the whole process is quite precise. We cannot randomly just pick up spiritual knowledge. We have to get scripture, and of scripture is what is the real scripture. Finally, it is Bhagavatam. And then the Bhagavatam we have to receive through the proper authorities, through a devotee of the Lord. Then it will have spiritual effect. So it is possible to describe the Supreme Lord using words if the words come from the devotees, because the Lord has his inconceivable shaktis by which he can make anything spiritual, transform anything and make it spiritual. So that is the answer to that question. How can words describe the Supreme Lord?
Okay. Any question there?
A little bit of a difference. They do describe things. Krishna, of course, is described in detail. They even describe Radha. So why is Bhagavatam superior? Well, the whole story is told in Bhagavatam itself. This is the last Purana written, or revised, actually, to say Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. And he is distinct from every other form, even the forms of Bhagavan. So in the other Puranas, yes, Krishna, maybe he's an avatar of Vishnu or whatever, and he has his pastimes, but ultimately it's not understood what his position is. So in the Bhagavatam, we have Krishna put on the top, and then we have his Vrindavan form, and particularly that Madhurya Rasa put as the ultimate realization. That is pointed out as the ultimate realization. So then we get a very, very special goal in mind from the Bhagavatam, which is not there in the other works. And it comes from the mouth of Sukadev, which makes it sweeter.
So then do we say that Swayam Bhagavan is only Krishna and Vrindavan?
No, all three are them. But in Swayam Bhagavan, then we have these three gradations. And in Vrindavan itself, we have gradations according to the rasas, up until Madhurya Rasa and up ultimately Radha. So that becomes the highest realization of all. Therefore, we put Radha and Krishna in our temples to represent that tattva. And that was the goal of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to present Radha and Krishna to the material world in Kali Yuga through Nam Sankirtan.
Said that the Vedas emanate from the breathing of the Lord. So how do we understand that technically?
Oh, well, just like the Lord can eat with his eyes or whatever like that. So he simply, in other words, actually the Vedas are eternal. Scripture is eternal. So it's described that the Vedas that starts breathing, so to speak, particularly when he comes up with high grieving, when he breathes, they come out of his mouth or whatever, his nose. So what this means is that it's just naturally part of the Lord, just as the breathing process is part of a person, breathing in and out. So naturally, it emanates from the Lord. So in other words, it's non-different from him. It's spiritual, completely spiritual. And he can manifest in any way he wants. Of course, breathing we can also associate with sound. He can just say them. Which is the same thing as breathing in one sense. We utter sounds and it's like breathing. So, in other words, Vedas come from the mouth of the Lord. Whether he has to move his tongue or not doesn't matter. Effortlessly it comes out.
So then it said that the Shruti is emanating from the Lord, so how do we understand the Smriti?
Oh, yeah. Ultimately, even the Smriti is considered eternal in another sense. The Vedas are eternal and distinct in the sense that they're unchangeable. And the words and the syllables, etc., are always in the same form. They appear and disappear in the material world. They come out of Brahma and may disappear. The demons steal them or whatever. They come out again. They're the same. No change at all. The Smritis are somewhat changeable. And they do have a beginning each time. Vedavyas writes the Puranas, for instance, or the Mahabharata. So he actually writes it. It's a little bit different from the previous day when he writes the thing also, because the history is a little different, whatever. Well, it's not always the same, so that's why it's continually, because the eternal one sense, the concepts are eternal, but the actual words may differ. So that's one of the differences. The other difference, of course, is that the Vedas have swaras in them. And then you have to be qualified to chant according to those swaras, high, low, and middle pitches, etc. Whereas the other smritis, no. Anyone can chant, no qualification, and there's no swaras involved. It's a technical difference. But the concepts of the Bhagavatam or any Purana are actually the same as the Vedas, because Vedavyas writes the Puranas as the commentary on the Vedas, so therefore it must have the same meaning. Mahabharata is also written as a commentary on the Vedas. It must have the same meaning. So in that sense, there's no difference.
So which is considered more important?
For us, the Bhagavatam is the ultimate Shruti. It's higher than Shruti. Because it's the final work. And it contains the highest fruit, revelation of Radha and Krishna. So therefore, it's considered the ultimate. Whereas everything, Radha and Krishna interact in the other works, including the Vedas. So then this is the final revelation directly, so it's considered the highest. This is, of course, Tattva Sandarbha. Bhagavatam is the highest pramana. Shantarasa?
Yes.
One example is the sages in Mathura when Krishna came into the arena of Kamsa, and everybody saw him differently,
yeah.
And the women thought of him as Cupid. Madhurya Rasa, his friends were there, and they were joking with him. And Sakya Rasa, his parents, Vasudevendra Bhakti Sang was their child, and Vatsalya Rasa, and like, so we had all the primary rasas. So the, and even the secondary rasas were represented by the demons and everything. So some sages there saw him as the Param Brahma. They were just looking at him like the yogis, you know. So how do they get there in the first place is that if they practice mixed devotion, for instance, they get a chance to somehow go to the spiritual world, but their relationship is quite distant. And they appreciate Krishna, but they experience more of the peace rather than the joy of service. So they don't do service, but they meditate on him mostly, and then they feel very blissful in their peace. Again, Mr. Bhakti Yoga, Mr. Bhakti